BRS meeting, November 14th, 2016.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the bus rental subcommittee to order, please. Good afternoon. Brian Miller, subcommittee chair, with introductions. So, again, I'm Brian Miller, now it's January, your subcommittee chair. We'll go to my left.
Denise Rush, Suitland, Maryland, Vice Chair of Metro Heights.
The first Vice Chair of the meeting is.
Yeah.
And first Vice Chair of
the
AAC.
That's what you're in trouble. Phil Posner, Vice Chair of the meeting.
Darren H. Bush, Washington, D.C. And I have to say, happy birthday to Theo.
Thank you.
Amen. Mr. Brooke Colbert, Metro Office of Eligibility.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Hey, it works. Charlie Crawford, Silver Spring, Maryland. And I want to put a motion to wish Phil a happy birthday.
Anyone want to second that? Any objection? So moved. Happy birthday, Phil.
Larry Hale, member.
Roger William Fenga.
Suzanne Campbell, Arlington.
Light crowd this afternoon. I like the special effects, Chris. That's pretty. We have a ghost in the machine. Let's begin as usual with the approval of the agenda for this evening. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda as submitted?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, without objection, all those in favor of accepting the agenda as submitted, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That's opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries. Agenda's approved. Moving on to the minutes from the October meeting. We have, as usual, a terrifically compiled set of minutes from our meeting. Can I get a motion to accept the minutes as submitted?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. No discussion, then without objection, I'd like to invite all those to approve the minutes by signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Objections? Abstentions? It's approved. Excellent. Okay, so moving right along to public comments.
We have two, Mr. Chair.
Excellent.
First is Heidi Case.
Excellent. Welcome, Heidi.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to see you all. So first I'll share that I hooked up with some Metro people at the Mayor's Disability Awareness Expo, and we're very excited at Project Action to hear about the new Smart Trip Metro Access cards coming out. And so I just wanted to say thanks that they are going to come out to our December Project Action meeting with some practice cards and a bus. So some of our people will be able to practice tapping and going on. Then less than a mile from Fort Totten. The bus is going to go to Fort Totten, and everybody's going to get an opportunity to practice tapping and going through the gate. So I think that's wonderful, and I want to thank Metro for making that possible. And the other issue, quickly, that's on your agenda is the emergency exercises. And I'm really concerned that so many of us with wheelchairs don't feel comfortable participating because of the waiver. And then you begin to look at, are these first responders actually getting the full experience that they would face with a lot more people in wheelchairs actually in that situation, because I certainly would not, under the current conditions, agree to participate. My wheelchair's, you know, my quality of life, and if anything were to happen, even if they would pay for it, there's just the time it takes to get it repaired and all those kind of things. And I think that that's an issue that needs further discussion by the group.
Thank you very much, Heidi. I think we'll have that discussion here shortly. It's good to see you.
Mr. Chair, next yes. speaker is Darnese Bush.
Very good. Darnese, go right ahead.
My comment is about, I have experience about the exit gates at Judiciary Square on both sides, because they're so close to the track. If a person comes through there in a chair, because I did that, slipping down a careful drive, because you could actually, it's very easy for you, and it's dark there, it's dark. Both entrances and exits are dark and isolated, and if no one else gets off, you have to maneuver the gate in your chair yourself to get on the elevator. And I have deep concerns about the safety of people in chairs or on crutches. You know, people with limited mobility.
Well, so. Mr. Chair, I'd add to that is the gates are really tight. So if you're in a chair and you really have to put a lot of force to get that gate open, which means you've got force going through the gate and you might continue on. Crutches are a little easier because I usually get caught in the gate and fall down, which isn't as bad. But in a chair, you put a lot of force.
And I think it's a lot of I have to open the gate, back up, and then, you know, hold the gate and drive through.
And part of the problem is the lighting you're saying that this doesn't give you enough visual warning.
Once we get the tap, that'll be fine. But right now, you have to go through the gate, that extra gate. You can forget it because
there's no way out.
Yeah, it's isolated. There's no button for you to access anybody upstairs or anything.
Do any of our metro staff want to comment on that? Or?
That is a challenge. In fact, when we were looking at the idea of locking the gates for fare evasion purposes, one of the things we did as staff is say there's certain stations you can't lock the gates because the customers don't have ready access to the station manager at all times. So, stations like the ones you were describing, those gates would remain open. However, ones like I said, once you get the smart trip card that will allow you to use the fare gates, then you should have independent access. Although, for some reasonable accommodations, there still may be a few stations in which those gates, the side gates, are not locked because of reasonable accommodations with service animals. We're looking at that. But the whole purpose of this distribution of these new cards is to provide a greater level of independence to customers who are eligible for the free ride benefit but have to depend and wait on station managers oftentimes, who are oftentimes elsewhere in order to get in or out. So we're trying to move beyond that.
Well, one thought at Judiciary, the problem is the gate faces the track, whereas the tap gates are parallel to the track, and I wonder if there's some way they could change that gate so that the emergency gate is parallel to the track. In other words, so what happens is the tap gates are this way, the emergency gate is that way, and so you get the emergency gate in the other direction, that would really solve the problem.
The challenge with that, now, if you're saying, like down at Judiciary Square, you're saying you're walking down the platform, you know, you're walking straight towards where the operator would be, and you have to make, instead of being able to walk straight into the fare gate, you have to go and make a left. And it's very narrow, especially if you're using the wheelchair, because the track is right there, yes. So we faced that at Judiciary Square and a couple other stations. Changing the infrastructure of these stations is probably not going to happen, I guess to say. It's, we looked at Jeremytown, yeah, there's a couple of them where the emergency gate is like, you may have a foot between the gate and the bumpy tiles, and then you're right there at the ledge.
Is that not the, sorry, Chris, is that not the case when you're going through the regular fare gates?
Correct. The regular fare gates is straight ahead.
Sure. So less of a rough more space.
So, yeah, it would be a safety benefit, but actually in that case, because we've been talking to the judiciary's run stations where we've talked to one particular customer about a reasonable accommodation. Well, yes, he is unable, you know, at all times to use the gate with a service animal. And he admits he's like literally on the edge of the platform trying to get into that gate. But we've looked at it, there's really no infrastructure changes that would not cost 7-8 figures. So it's a lot to try to change that.
Well, one of the things they could do, they've got two tap gates, and having gone out that way a lot of times, they never have a large enough crowd to require two tap gates, and if they change
it. No, they only have one.
But it's a judiciary, so it might be.
I thought it was two.
It's always one down there.
Is there any way that they could install a button or something so that you could get the attention of somebody in the station?
Well, we looked at that, and that hasn't always worked. There's that technology is at other stations, and we're trying to improve the remote call. But again, what we're really trying to go is so you can avoid that gate altogether.
And
that's where we're really going to be. You're going to be able to go through the accessible fare gate in a very safe, direct way.
Do we have a timeline for that at this point, Chris?
Now, Colbert, do you have a? I mean, this is almost ready. You know what I mean? Or but Chris Colbert is working on
it. I don't know if we have an official time set yet for when that's exactly going to. Take place or happen, what it should be within the next few months.
How long?
The next couple of months.
Okay,
so that's pretty soon. I wonder also, well, I'm sorry, Chris, and you?
No.
Sometimes mics are really hot that much after. Because I'm way back here. I wonder too if that might be something for such as it is, I guess, our lighting committee. You know, you mentioned, Darnese, that lighting is also an issue there. And I can't imagine that that also doesn't cover the lighting issue, isn't something that covers that whole entryway.
Yeah.
Something to think about. All right, thank you very much. And thank you to both Chris and Jim for the responses. Suzanne, I think you had did you want to bring up your question?
Yeah, sure. So I was just hoping for an update on a few months ago. It was discussed that all of the rail cars, the bumpers in between, were going to be switched out. And I've been noticing that a lot of the rail, or some of the rail cars, still have the bumpers in between instead of being retrofitted. And I was just wondering if there's a timeline for that.
Yeah, well, our original timeline is between 12 and 18 months. That decision hasn't been made yet. I mean, they may be moved. It depends on what is easier to accomplish, the goal of having the rope barriers. But, so, I can't tell you that just yet. But the Metro's goal, what we shared with the FTA and the public, is to try to have all cars that are in the system with the traditional road barriers within 12 to 18 months. So we'll see. That's our goal.
Okay, thanks.
That's definitely worth continuing to track. Do we have any other public comment?
I have one more.
You sure? Go ahead, Chris.
The station signs and I know it's a lot of the blue-orange sign. I was wondering if they were being painted because at some of the stations, the name and destination was there, but not the emblem that tells you, you know, the disability or the little maps that are in there. So are they being updated or something?
Yeah. Right. I wouldn't
thing they're being painted. If anything, they're being replaced. Because that's one of the goals, is to replace the signs with the updated signs. But where we are at that, I don't know, right now, I can't even tell you. But I certainly can have more information by this time next month. I could bring a project manager down here. But new signage is supposedly going in the stations at all times. Almost, because there's so many new signs needed, it's like an ongoing effort. Now, which station did you see that's on the orange line? But which station?
I think it was the Metro Center.
That would be a place it would start.
It might have been.
You were reading as you were going.
Yeah,
but on the Orange Boulevard. I'll find out some more information. Maybe, I mean, we can invite Mr. Proctor down here next month and give us an update. Yes.
Sounds good.
Previously, on most of the trains, they used to have a map on one side.
Yes.
I really miss that map that gives you the information, because now it's replaced by a safety exercise or something on each car.
So let me confess. Now, this is something we did, I will say, with the support of the AAC, although there has been, even from my good friend Dr. Paulson, there's some contention over aspects of the sign. But I'll confess, I for one I'll acknowledge that when I'm in the middle of a train, I realize, oh my goodness, the map isn't here, and I gotta figure out. So I admit that, but yes, what we did, what you had before, were the ends were the two big signs, and then usually in the middle was a smaller sign, but it's still somewhat readable depending on your visual capabilities. But we decided to move that smaller sign in order to make the text on the emergency sign much bigger. So it's big, but so something had to give. But yes, when I'm sitting in the middle of the train and I'm trying to realize how many stops away, I miss that map all the time too.
You know, my suggestion is to put the map on the ceiling.
Yeah,
you can see it during rush hour. It won't be blocked.
I offered that idea. Now that's not our control, but it was a suggestion that was made. And you know, over time, because this was like 3 years ago when we made this change. So over time, minds change. So maybe the AAC can bring that up again and make it as a recommendation. It's not necessarily an accessibility issue, but you know, just as a customer, you might want to suggest that.
Because they do have some advertising on the ceiling.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At the time, there was nothing on the ceiling, and that was one of the reasons this idea wasn't necessarily embraced. But as times have changed, perhaps there is now room for a map on the roof of the ceiling.
I would make a motion then.
It might be hard to see on the roof.
Well, it can be braille. I would make a motion that we request that masks be put on the ceiling of cars so that they would be accessible during rush hour. In the middle of the car.
We have a motion. Do we have a motion? Marissa, I think it's a second. Do we have a motion to recommend that the Metro put masks on the ceilings so that they would be accessible, especially during rush hour? Any discussion?
I said high contrast.
With the star mats up there too.
I modified that to the older cars because on 7000 the mapping and where you are and everything else is fine. But on anything below 7000, why not put the mats on the ceiling?
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion to recommend that maps be placed on the scenes of cars prior to the 7000 series, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carried. Thanks, Bill. That didn't take long to get to a motion. Look at this. Only 420. 419, actually, I think. Yeah, it's never too early for a motion, so it's not no, I think that this instrument, I for one had no idea there was advertising on the ceiling. That's new to me. So we learned something new every time we come here. Is there any further public comments before we move to the ombudsman report?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have our ombudsman here? I don't have a name for our ombudsman. On the agenda, is it Mr. Schaefer?
Yes, Mr. David Schaefer. Yes.
All right.
He's a person. Well, the ombudsman.
Why did they ban the other? But there's no name on here, so I thought I'd double check. Welcome, Mr. Schaefer. Thank you. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. So I followed up on the questions you asked me 2 months ago, followed up partially last month on the customer complaints, customer survey issues. I had customer research go back and look at the experience of people with the senior disability card or the reduced fare card. Because that was the one we can't adequately count currently, the Metro Access customers on bus and rail. And those people accounted for about 14% of our customers over the last 2 year period. And that's actually pretty good if you consider that the percentage of people with disabilities in the population is around 19%. And you figure that some of these are being picked up at Metro Access and of course not being counted. So we're really doing pretty well at getting a good representation of customers with disabilities and seniors in the bus and rail system. About 57% of them ride both bus and rail, and then the remainder, about half and half, ride only bus and only rail. It turns out that the experiences of the customers with disabilities is not hugely different than other customers. They have many of the same problems. It turns out they are, however, more concerned about safety on issues on bus. They tend to feel more uncomfortable waiting for the bus and on the bus for their personal safety. And in the rail system, they tend to, in both bus and rail, they have a tendency to have problems purchasing fare much more than the other customers. And with respect to announcements on bus and rail, that's also a big issue for the customers with disabilities. Other than that, surprisingly, it turned out their issues with elevators, escalators were about the same as other customers. So that's pretty much all we have. All they could do was go back through the identical standard questions of customer satisfaction that have existed over the last 2 years. I probed a bit as to what possibility there might be in getting some more focused questions and didn't get a really enthusiastic reception on that for budget reasons. That's pretty much where we stand now. What I plan to do around the end of the year, now that I've had trained the customer service staff and been getting decent data since August, is to do a full analysis of the customer complaints on ADA issues. And I hope to have something for you guys in January on that. The other things I'm going to tell you we're working on is that yes.
Is okay. You want to ask a question about that?
I wanted to look at your customer service stuff. So, how do you? What is Metro's plan for actually using that information to? How are you going to use the customer service stuff? Are you going to take it and actually use that to proactively come up with policies that may actually enhance the customer experience? And if so, and how have you done that?
Well, since my other job is the policy officer, I think pretty much we have the policies we need. It's a question of getting people to follow, because that is the major issue. Which is what I was about to move to, which is the training that I'm starting on next month. And so that's where I see the problem. If you have ideas on policies that we don't have that could enhance customer satisfaction, I would, be open to them. You can always share them with anybody.
So, just fortunately, this is the part where I actually do have a little experience. So, looking, for example, you brought up stop announcements. You know, modifying the data that you have could give you clear information on, you know, for example, if the stop announcements weren't heard, what was going on? Was it just because the equipment on the train, was it operator error? Was it because the operator tried to talk over the destination announcement as it's being made? Or are they trying to close the doors before it says this is a red line train to Shady Grove? You know, really looking at where are the anomalies happening and then using that information to kind of shape your policies. For example, having operators wait until the announcement clears before trying to close the doors or move on. Something that simple, for example, just enhances the customer experience significantly. Because right now they're worried about their timeline more than they are making sure that people on the platform know where the train's going.
Yeah, I agree. I see that all the time on the 7,000 cars. I'm standing there and I wait for the announcement, and before I even hear it, the door is closed. So I can't get on because I can't see what the destination is until the announcement. Then it's too late because they close the doors and they're off. So I agree with you on that. But again, I don't know if that's a question of policy or a question of training, but that's certainly would like to look into.
Yeah, I want to echo what Larry is saying about that, what you're saying about that, David. Noticed that to be increasingly problematic. And it drives me on all the series, not just 7,000, but the announcement of the color and direction of the train being made as the train is pulling in before the video, which is contrary to what the policy that we've been told is, which is that they make an announcement until the train stops, the door is open, and you have half a chance of being able to hear what they're saying more often than not. And I drive the metro every day, hear the announcement as the train is roaring into the station.
Right, and I'm just going to add, you know, it's, you're right, I think it's, it boils down to training, Dave, but I know in Boston we have it clearly stated in the rule book, this is what you say, this is what a departing announcement is, and this is what it almost should say, this is what the arriving announcement is, this is what you should be saying, mm-hmm. and the standing announcement, mm-hmm. and when it's supposed to happen, and when it's supposed to be said, and when it happens. So, like, those clearly defined set of rules, you know, making sure operators know what to do, when they're supposed to do it, and for the most part, what you're supposed to do. And then having them sign off on it, saying that I've been trained on this, it gives you the ability to try to hold the operator a little more accountable for their actions.
Well, certainly one of the things we can do is look at what exactly the SOP says.
Okay, Mary, you want to say something? I'm sorry. Mary, okay, you want to say something?
One issue that I've seen is that the station announcement on the train when you're pulling in is drowned out by announcements over the PA being made in the station.
Right.
I can look around and see where we're pulling in most of the time, but if you can't, I don't know if there's anything.
Yeah, the safe track announcements are kind of constant these days. So they do tend to run over everything else.
And it comes from the control center.
Right.
I've noticed, depending on the time of day during rush hour, there have been a couple of times when there wasn't sufficient time to get off the train. When you're standing at the door, I mean, the doors open and close like that. And not rush hour, they're taking the full 15 seconds before they open the door, which is nice. That's when the announcements come in. Nobody's getting on or off. But it seems they're more interested in headway right now, particularly because, and I'm imagining this, but because there's a lot of slow track on the train, across the track work. I know the other last several days it's taken me at least 15 to 20 minutes longer to get from one place to the same place on the train because they're just going. And they do announce it. I mean, that than in slow track. So it may be what's happening here. The headway is taking precedence over announcements and times because of the slow track and single track. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
There are speed restrictions on some trains right now. I'm aware of that. But I would just say, and our general manager's always told us, safety over schedule. So if the issues of quick closing doors and things like that, we just need to hear about them in these specifics so we can kind of remind our other colleagues about safety and understanding, because that's a safety issue. If you're in a wheelchair and the door crushes you, or if you're not, if you're on crutches.
Yeah.
So it doesn't just mean if you're in a wheelchair. So, yeah, we get some specifics, we can always follow up.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I get these complaints every morning from the day before. So if you either put these in online, well, I'm fixing the accessibility online process, but if you put these in the customer service or you even send them to me with the details of train number or time online, I can follow up on them better.
Thank you. Larry, do you have another comment on this topic?
Yeah. What is your SOP as it relates to operators and like working on the platform? What should they be doing when they dock at the station, before they leave, things like that?
I can find a quote for you, but I know just generally speaking, you pull in, secure that it's a complete stop. As you're coming in, you announce the station and line color and direction, and then you look out the window because you're dwelling, and you're supposed to ensure that the platform is clear. Close your window, announce that you're heading off, and then pull off. I mean, that's just a ad lib of the policy. I can get the exact policy, but is there a particular feature looking?
You mentioned the door closing, and we're talking about safety, and I find that that tends to be a very chronic issue, and I would probably link it to the idea that operators aren't following the SOP when it comes to looking out, making sure people are in the safe position. And I don't know where your door close buttons are, but I've seen them when they're really close to the window. You know, you flip a knob, and you can still look out the window and see whether everyone's in a safe position before trying to close the door. Clearly, you're not going to catch everyone, but in most cases, you're going to be able to see that everyone's clear away from the platform. It's safe to close the doors.
And Chris, do you want to speak to the question of dwell time? I mean, specific amount of seconds? Because we've had that discussion here.
I can't remember the exact amount of seconds. I don't want to throw a number out there around the world and not be the right number. So let me follow up with you on that. Maybe, like I said, I know the rail operator SOP is a very thick document. I've gone through parts of it for individual issues. But I can take this conversation and bring back specifics to that, to those particular questions you're raising tonight.
Thank you. That'd be great. David, do you want to press on?
Just let me finish up. Yeah. Other thing I was going to say is I'm starting training with bus operators at their safety meetings next month. And the current director of bus, Dolores Proctor, is very, very supportive. And she's assigned her assistant to work with me directly on the ADA issues. They're going to even make the bus safety meeting paid and required on these ADA issues to ensure everybody attends them. So I think that's going to help. I noticed after I did the one in the Montgomery division, the complaints in that division dropped off significantly. So I'm kind of targeting different divisions depending on their complaint rate. The third thing I want to mention is that thanks to Chris and Mr. Kent, they've appointed me as the 508 coordinator, as well, so I've been working on accessibility of many of our issues with the beta website. We discovered that the online complaint process was not fully accessible, and then we're fixing that. I was working with Warren last week on that. And we're working on the Smart Benefits portal, which has some issues as well. So if there are other accessibility issues you encounter, please direct them to me so I can follow up on them.
Okay, excellent. Is that the, your report for today?
That's it.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Shaker before we move on? Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Shaker. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
I'll see you next month. All right, moving along here pretty speedily, everybody. Thank you. Glad to be here, Chris. Are we ready for our first program item?
We are ready. We have the one and only Corinne Fitzberry, Accessibility Planning Manager at the Office of ADA Counseling.
Excellent.
Hi, I just want to talk a little bit about the bus stop that is going in.
This is Mr. Rush's favorite topic.
I wanted to say something about that, actually. I didn't want to go unnoted. Yeah. I was excited for her when I saw this.
I just want to talk a little bit about the bus stop that's going in the MGM down the National Harbor, because I know that's been on some discussion here previously. And hopefully I can answer the questions, and if I can, then we can try to go back and get some answers. Let's see, the bus stop is going in for routes NH1 and NH2. So that's the one, the route NH1 goes from Southern Avenue Metro to National Harbor, and then NH2 goes from National Harbor to Alexandria. The bus stop is going to be on the National Avenue side of the MGM, which is going to be known in the future as Monument Avenue, or maybe it's Monument View Avenue, but anyway, it's on that side of the MGM. It's going to be a very accessible bus stop. This is what I'm most excited about. The bus stop itself is going to have, you know, your normal, because you know, at a bus stop, you have your bi-way lighting and boarding area. It's also going to have a shelter, and there's a crosswalk. And the crosswalk here is going to be great, so we're not going to have to deal with curb ramps or navigating across any of that. Instead, the vehicles will, you know, drive over a raised curb, a raised crosswalk, which I think will be really nice. It's going to be also 10 feet wide, pretty nice. The bus stop itself is going to be where the other employee and coach buses are loading. I don't know exactly where this is interested in the MGM. My best guess is that's in the interview on the casino level, but since I'm not actually in the MGM, I'm not sure. But B and I are working on that. My understanding is that the potential opening day of the bus stop is November 27th, but that's still up in the air right now because the developer is still working on finalizing things on their end, and then we have an internal process that has to happen before the bus stop can open, like through the sign has to be put there, and there needs to be employee training for the drivers. Are there any questions?
Quick question, it says a bus stop at pedestrian accessibility. Is a pedestrian, is there a particular aspect of this that is apart from some of the features you described that are specific to pedestrians, or is that just an extension of those that are taking the bus?
It's really for those that are taking the bus that would be using this, because the bus stop itself is more of one, almost like a service roadway that's led off of the main roadway. So you're going to have Monument Avenue, and then there's a drive right off of that where the coach buses would go, that the metro bus will also travel, which will get the pedestrians as close as possible to the building, because if you're going to be getting off of this bus stop, there's really not really anywhere else that you'd be walking.
I actually have a question for Mr. Flake with respect to this, because we've had discussions at our meeting here about the bus stop in the future, as it were, you know, in a more expanded notion of accessibility of bus stops. I was curious to know if this is a stop that reflects some of those principles that Chris, that you have talked about very, very eloquently in the past.
Well,
or is that you?
I would say yes and no. One, the stop is not being accessible.
Sure.
But is it going to be a, as we say, a destination stop or something that would, you know, highlight the stop itself? And the answer is probably no. The most features you probably have is there's shelter that will be up there.
Right, there will be a shelter. That's the standard, a lot of shelter. That's, I guess, I'm trying to think. I think there are the ones that are down at the Franconia Metro station. I believe is the same type of shelter that will be here.
So let's say that we'll start off with an accessible stop, and other features certainly could be added later. And as the location is clearly a destination, it may be advantageous to make it a highlighted stop. But at the onset, the main focus is to make sure people have access there.
And I guess what I meant more to, about that, Chris, is just thinking of our discussion of in prior meetings about you know, having full access to the stop, having somewhere to go once you leave the immediate area around the shelter. The positive onto a grass strip or something. And, you know, I'm totally unfamiliar with that.
They're going to use a green line right through the scene so they can
I just break the tension, you know.
So, does it have to be crosswalk that would get you from the bus stop itself into the consumer hotel? And there's also an additional 6 foot a 6 foot sidewalk that leads away from the bus stop down along the road. But there's not actually a lot of destinations to walk down that sidewalk.
Sure.
Unless it was in fresh air, I suppose.
And what I meant by destination is simply that, you know, you weren't stuck on a 20-foot spot of cement and some grass or something.
And there are a lot of things in National Harbor besides the MGM Casino.
Absolutely.
Well, there are, but you would probably take the bus to a different stop.
Go all the way around.
Thank you. I'm not even doing a complex conversation. The rest of the committee have questions.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, pardon me.
I just wanted to, you may have said something about this already, but NH2 is leaving from Alexandria. From what point? And is that nonstop?
I have it on my phone here. You can give me 2 seconds. I thought there might be a question about that.
It's starting at King Street, this first stop.
At the King Street Transit Center.
The subway?
So NH2 serves the Huntington Metro Station as well as the King Street Metro Station.
And will that be
nonstop?
From there go?
It goes across the 485 bridge, and then it serves National Harbor, and it'll go to the Oxenhill Parking Ride, as well as, you know, the waterfront area of the National Harbor, the MGM.
Thank you. One suggestion I'd make, low budget. Arlington now at their bus stops has the GPS, and it's just little locks. And you push the button, and it's got all the stops on the route, and it lights up which stop the bus is at that particular time. It's kind of like what we have on the 7000 series. It doesn't look very expensive, but it's very useful, particularly in a route that's that long and it's only running twice an hour, to have an idea of where they are and what's going on. Something you might look into. Contact DRT and I'm sure they'll tell you how much it costs.
Thank you, Bill. Darnese.
My question was along those lines. Does the bus stop have audio? Sometimes you can push a button and it'll tell you what time the bus comes.
Right, pretty much that stuff.
So there's currently not going to be any sign or audio at the bus stop. It's something that's not included for me to add in the future, but there's not current plans for it now.
So, will the time that the bus arrives be posted at a bus schedule?
There should be a bus schedule. I think that's standard for a bus stop. And it looks like, give me a second here. For the NH2 route, it looks like there's a point down by the waterfront National Harbor that is a time point for that route.
Yeah, they published it at leaving 10 minutes after the hour from King Street and arriving at 40 minutes after the hour in National Harbor.
It looks like for those bus stops, there is a point in National Harbor by the waterfront that's a time point for the buses, which is very close to the MGM. So I usually, as a bus driver, I usually kind of take that route, which I'll say, like, the bus will do it to see my stuff.
Is it H2 right now? Is it started?
Yeah. Okay. We inaugurated a couple weeks ago. Everybody went out there and party.
Yeah, sure. Any other questions? That's it, Gary. We'll go to the public. Ms. Gates, can we get a microphone? Thank you.
Ms. Rush must already know the answer to this, but given if it were to be on November 27th, when does Metro Access Service? Immediately at the same date, whenever the bus service starts, that your access service to that location would indeed.
Right, because there's a lead time for us knowing when the bus will go there, so the Metro Access will also be able to adjust for service.
Thank you, Heidi.
MTM grant is not in the area. That's just a wreck. I mean, you know.
Well, no, it is in the area.
Yeah, it is in the area.
Metro
Access can go there any day.
I didn't know. Sorry.
Yeah, I think. Right? Yeah.
I mean, you can
go to the headquarters and
we won't be able to take the station up there.
Right, that's that particular spot.
Well,
oh, no, she can use it. Yeah, if the casino opens tomorrow, she can use it today. She just wants to go by.
Yeah, but the thing is, the traffic. I'm going to the traffic meetings. It's going to not be nice to get there. I can't imagine. You all laugh and joke, Mr. Blake, but remember when it first broke ground, I said you need to get a headquarters there, because it's going to be very hard to get to the MTM plan. I mean, they're having meetings after meetings about how the people who live there are going to be able to get out of their house, and the people who want to get there are able to get there as easy as you think, because there's too many ways. I mean, they're coming from Virginia, they're coming from Maryland, they're coming down St. Barnabas Road. It is going to be a mess. So when you book a trip, you know, my subscription is going to be, you know, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And they pick me up and bring me to work and then take me to the casino. They're going to be able to, you know, pick me up, but it's not going to be, the buses are going to be stopped.
We'll call that.
No, I'm talking about, you know, really, I mean, it's, they're having major meetings about traffic.
Yeah, no doubt there'll be a significant impact on the traffic flow in that area.
Got two words for you, Ms. Rush. Phil or DB2. Phil and Israel.
It's a tough take. Yes, but
that's going to be worse because, the man's going to say it's $20 ride, and if he's stuck in that traffic, it's going to be a $40 ride, and you know who I'm going to call.
Any other questions from Mrs. Berg?
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. Y'all are determined to get out of here early, but we'll see about this next topic. See how that holds. Moving on, maybe we'll see. Moving on to another one of our favorite topics, the emergency exercise. I think we had this described as a reflection on the meeting that was held last month with some of the emergency responders and here at Metro headquarters. Am I correct in that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We would like to know, you can start by sharing. You and Larry with the committee about your experience with the meeting with COG first, And then Larry, I think you also participated in the last Metro Access, I mean the last emergency exercise, and if you would just share some of your thoughts with that as well.
Larry, you want to get us rolling on that then? You ready?
I'm trying to be quiet today. So I'll start in chronological order, back to forward. So last month, the MW, Metro Washington Council of Governments, or whatever MW stands for, Council of Governments, had a meeting, and we talked a little bit about emergency evacuations and our concerns regarding that, of those being issues about the waiver and obviously training. So we talked to them about that, specifically the need to have people with disabilities be a part of the training, and so that first responders can get, prior to going to the emergency evacuations, hands-on experience in, you know, how to work with people with disabilities outside of the emergency evacuation situation. And through doing this, creating a brochure which outlines some key things to keep in mind when dealing with and people with disabilities, they would have that on their person whenever they're doing the emergency evacuation training. So really having people with disabilities as part of the training experience, I think is crucial. I've seen it done in other places. It works significantly well. You know, versus having the computer-based training, which sometimes can be, you know, outdated and doesn't really necessarily give you the hands-on experience that you would require. I think all of that information is crucial. We've also talked about the waiver and the concerns that people and that the AEC has voiced with regard to the waiver. It seems as though the Council of Governments are very willing to work with us. They, as well as some of the people who attended the meeting, seem to be really excited about, you know, like looking at some standardized ways of providing training so that people with disabilities are properly served. You know, so there that is. As for the emergency evacuation, there were three of us from the AAC, Patrick Sheehan, and I forget the other person.
Paul.
Paul, yes.
Also.
We all did the emergency evacuation training. And instead of going into detail about everything that happened, I know one of the key concerns focus on communicating with people who are deaf or hard of hearing. There didn't seem to be any first responders or Metro staff that had any sort of device or sheet of paper, whiteboard, whatever, to communicate with people who are deaf or hard of hearing. And in those emergency evacuation situations, it's really crucial. So there's that, and I mean, it always just kind of ends back with the same word, which is training. So that's pretty much my synopsis.
Yeah, thank you. So we might as well the last emergency evacuation training was held.
So it was held at the Southern Avenue Station. The train traveled a few feet north of Southern Avenue Station. It was simulated that there was smoke coming from the train, so everyone had to evacuate. They would take people out. You had to walk the track. The little walkway that was parallel to the track onto the platform at Southern Avenue Station.
So you and the other two members of the committee who participated were able to walk the track, or were allowed to do that?
We were.
Yeah.
I think there may have, I think Paul may have done the e-tag card.
Sure.
But
you and
videos, yeah, me and Pat won't do it.
Thank you very much. Others who were either at the meeting or participated, I don't think Patrick is a newcomer like Diddy.
I have a question about the exercise. My pet peeve on the emergency signs, and it's one of them, has been access to the intercom system. During these exercises, anybody tried to use the intercom system to figure out how to do it?
So that's the intercom system for the...
From the car to the driver.
The answer is, I don't think anyone interacted with the passenger emergency, well, what I'm used to calling a passenger emergency intercom, on the trains. I don't think anyone interacted with that. I think in this situation that the evacuation was controlled on Metro side, you know, they would start the training when they had everything set, i.e. the tracks, the energized, and all that sort of stuff. So I think in this particular situation, I think it ran the way that it was supposed to, in that they de-energized the tracks, they started the exercise when they needed to start the exercise, and things like that. I'll add also that the Metro personnel didn't use the intercoms. And what we were told is because they needed to walk the carriages to kind of A, let people know what's going on, and B, kind of take a look around and assess the situation, see who may need assistance and things like that.
Were there any wheelchair participants or service animal participants?
Not to my knowledge, there weren't any. Partly me, at least from the willability perspective, I'm sure that that has a lot to do with the waiver.
Well, one suggestion I would make for future exercises, which is reality, that there be an announcement through the entire train saying, this is an emergency. We are going to evacuate. If there are any individuals with disabilities, wheelchairs, vision, guide dogs, etc., approach the intercom system and let us know which car you're in.
Most of the time,
I'd
walk on one
tablet. But this is
weird. So, what are your concerns? I like your idea, and I think.
Wait, one at a time. Okay, so sorry. Darnie's responding here. Is there a.
I was responding to Thea. I was saying that doing exercise, they don't use a whole train, they usually use maybe 2 to 3 cars at the most.
But in real life,
driver walks through.
Right, but in real life, going through 8 cars in an emergency, it would be really nice. Also, if the event that triggers the event is a fire in one of the cars, or something bad in one of the cars, it would be nice to know that the passengers could locate the intercom because they're in different places, and there's nothing on that sign that tells them where it is. And the big thing on using them, the sign says, do not hold the button down when you're talking. And then on the intercom itself, it says, press to talk. So what do you do?
Very confusing.
So you're absolutely, I like the idea, first of all. I think it's important to make sure people have that firsthand knowledge on how to interact with that emergency intercom. When I used to do travel training, we did this as the training. So anybody who went through our group training up north, one of the things we always showed people is the emergency intercom, and we showed them how to use that. So my question would be, is that something that should be done in an emergency evacuation thing, i.e. having the customer, it looks like with a disability, having to interact with that emergency intercom, or is this more of a training thing where something should be offered to make sure that people with disabilities understand A, where the emergency intercom is located, and B, how to use it?
Sure, this is Brian, I think it's a little bit of everything, right? Because one, we'd have to establish that as a as a practice and as an expectation that first that drivers of the trains would be making announcements and then this be built into the emergency exercises as well. And also, whenever possible, we have the ability for people to train to know where those buttons are and how to use them. And maybe have better signage as well, so it isn't confusing. One of the things just to add to what Dr. Moser was saying about the need for that is that one of the things that we've heard from the community in general about these issues, these emergencies, is the lack of communication and the uncertainty and the what's going on and what do we do. And I know Metro is grappling with that input from the community and from what they from National Traffic Safety, the report from the various instances. But I think that as a committee, we can think about maybe building in something that would, enhance that communication.
So I was going to say, in lieu of that, I think one of the things that I wanted the committee to consider is looking at the emergency evacuation procedure from a training perspective at this point, and look at what are some ways that we, in conjunction with maybe Access Services staff, what are some ways in which we can be proactive and really engage the first responders and really trying to embrace this, working with people with disabilities to give the training that they need so that they can better assist us. And secondly, looking at how to incorporate the emergency intercom into the whole evacuation process in a manner that's, going to be safe for everyone and also meaningful.
Thank you, Larry. Philippa and Suzanne had questions or comments.
Thank you for welcoming us now. The problem with that suggestion is I'm not sure if there's a box at each end of the train, but a person with a visual disability would not be able to automatically know which end. And if it's an older train, they have those poles. If a person in a wheelchair got on in the middle of the car, there's a pole at each end that would negate their ability to get past it to get to the box.
So that was my concern, too. I feel like if you asked of members of the disabled general public, where were the emergency intercoms? How many out of those people with disabilities would actually know where they're located? So that's why I felt like it may be a two-step approach. Finding a way to train people with disabilities, having some sort of a training event, which would give people an overview of the train and its safety and access features. B, once doing that and trying to find a way to incorporate using the emergency intercom into an emergency evacuation process.
Thanks, Larry. Suzanne?
Yeah, so when I'm hearing everybody talk about these, I've not participated in one of these exercises before, but it sounds like the common theme is obviously training. And I like, Larry, what you were saying about coming up with a plan of what our recommendations are, how to train them. But I'm also wondering if some of what everybody's saying is that the first responders aren't trained in how to adequately help people with disabilities. So coming up with a plan or even finding people to recommend to train on the safe handling of somebody that is in a wheelchair or that has vision deficits or that has hearing, that sort of training that I don't even know what kind of training they're going through, if any, to know how to do that stuff in the first place. Do you know?
So, I feel like it's almost something that we could talk to people from Homeland Security. I know that there were people who were very disability aware, who worked through Homeland Security, who may have had some resources. We also, I'm sure that amongst us all, Access Services and us, we probably could create something. My
guess would be that it would be something that really looks at the, for lack of a better term, customer service aspect of it. What are some things to keep in mind? Identify yourself as a member of staff in situations, you know, in many situations, you can alleviate your anxiety with regard to helping people with disabilities by simply asking, what's the best way for me to assist you? Instead of assuming, you know, things like that.
And I'm almost just wondering if there's any sort of organizations, hospitals, like therapies, people that work in healthcare, like that sort of thing, that can do training or get like a volunteer system going on where if people want to take part in helping to train these first responders, because I know there's a lot of outreach into the community from a lot of hospitals and organizations of that sort who are working with people with disabilities all day, every day, and are professionally trained in it, that sort of thing.
Thank you, Ed.
I was curious, has anybody ever made a video of any of these exercises? And if not, you know, you should possibly make a video that's completely accessible to all types of disabilities, or the, with the blind, they can be descriptive and whatever. But put it on your site, on the WMATA site, and, you know, that way even the people who are participating, the first responders and so forth, could sit there and look at that and, you know, and because, you know, that personnel changes from, you know, time to time, and you're just retraining a lot. So I'm just wondering whether that can be done. And in this case, get Homeland Security to pay for it.
When you say, you know, videos on the website, mean that be directed toward passengers, customers of the metro, or toward emergency folks?
Like from beginning to end, when notification, you know, by car or by the button, and a notification or finding out how many people with disabilities are in the train, and then the evacuation procedures, and for each type, whether they're physical disabilities, flights or whatever.
So kind of a how-to video, almost like you see in airplanes when you get out there.
Well, it's
like you're trying to put on your life jacket.
So here's my suggestion, because I hear two things. I hear definitely creating a video for what it seems like is customers and how do we, you know, what to it's the customer experience when being evacuated, and training for first responders regarding how to assist people with disabilities. And I feel like the latter has to happen before the former. They have to know how they're going to assist you before Metro can say, this is how they're going to assist you. So what I will pose to the group is that A, we work with Access Services, if they want to work with us, to develop a plan. You know, but work with Access Services in developing a plan to, you know, try to create an evacuation, like a training for first responders with regard to evacuating people with disabilities. Something that is inclusive of using people with disabilities. And once we do that, we try it out, we get feedback from the first responders and it's like that. Then we, once it's been implemented, then work with creating a video that explains to people how to evacuate. Does that make sense?
It does.
What I might remind people of before Larry joined the group is we did have a really good meeting with representatives from Fairfax County. And we had EMS, fire, police, and WMATA. And having another session like that, where we have a discussion like this, because we've now had experience with the exercises they have, and discuss with them some of our suggestions that might facilitate what's going on, because they have their national guidelines of how they do it, but this is something a little bit unique, and it may be something like respecting the driver of the train, and have the train driver make the announcement to find out where there are specific people with specific disabilities, and then tell them in charge that that's where your resources for disabilities have to go when you're ready to go. So it's a question of linking it up, and I think if we could have another meeting with a group like that, it would be really useful. Because they were great when they came. They did a really nice job.
I remember that meeting. Larry's probably in the audience that day. We're here, perhaps it's now time, because we've now had, I believe, two exercises since then.
Yes.
So I think it's a good time to follow up to Mr. Bodner and his colleagues from the region. So let's see if we can arrange that.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. We've had a number of thoughts put out there. At some point, the committee might want to think if there's anything that's motion worthy. We already have Chris is going to take it up to Mr. Blake is going to take it up to see if we can get the facts. We can have the conversation with the.
So can we make a motion to move to follow up with Women's of Fairfax County or regional first responders to have them come and meet with us so that we can kind of discuss this so that we can.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion to that the committee working with the Metro staff invite first responder representatives and emergency planners back to continue our discussion and several exercises since our last discussion. And so we've had that motion put out there. Seconded.
And appropriate with a lot of people.
And of course, yeah, appropriate with a lot of people. Any discussion about the motion? Yeah, all those in favor of the motion to put that meeting together in a future cluster of subcommittee as appropriate, say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Extension? Motion carries. Thank you. Oh, thanks, Larry.
That motion.
And thank you, Larry, also for sharing your thoughts and reflections on both the meeting and your experience with emergency exercises. Does anyone else have anything they want to add to that discussion?
I think we should also review the waiver form, because, like I said,
are you the microphone?
Yeah, on the microphone, 36, sorry.
Okay, I think that we need to have someone come again, and we need to readdress the waiver form. Because I was actually injured when I participated, and I wouldn't want anybody to be injured participating, so I know that I'll never participate again because of that. And one of the reasons I felt that I probably was injured is because the emergency personnel didn't really listen to me tell them about my limitations or whatever. And in their rush to help me, they actually hurt me. So.
We've already sent motions to the board, we've talked to the board, and I would make a motion that we invite the new general counsel to meet with us to discuss why we have to have a waiver and how the waiver might be modified so that there is still coverage, but maybe limited coverage. I call it sovereign immunity, call it what you will, but clearly they don't want a $2 million lawsuit, but they certainly ought to be able to cover a few $1,000 in health benefits of rebuilding a chair. And so for that notice, I would invite the general counsel to come in and have her explain.
Yeah, I'm definitely in support of talking with Metro officials to modify so that.
Yeah, so, I'm sorry, Larry. So, Phil, are you making a motion?
Well, so.
Yes.
Make a motion. I was saying, because you want the general counsel, Ms. Lee, to come here and talk to you about the issue.
Exactly.
Right. So I don't know if we need a motion for that. How about we just send staff as on a
workshop
arrangement?
That's
fine. Yeah, you say your motion. You say your motion. It's just not.
We'll give her a right of first refusal.
Right.
And then we'll
staff will talk. But before the next exercise.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes. Charlie, go ahead.
Thank you. Pursuant to what was just being discussed, is there an existing opinion in writing that shows the derivation of the authority with respect to the application of the waiver?
No, when they were here last time, what was been told in back by general counsel at the time is that this is best practice across the country. This is what all the transit agencies do, and it does protect the agency. So our general counsel at the time agreed with the recommendation of our Office of Emergency Management recommendation that we use the waiver for these exercises.
So if I understand your now abated motion, that what you were seeking was the actual authority that requires the imposition of a waiver.
No, this is currently, in order to participate in one of the emergency exercises, you would have to sign a waiver. Phil would like the new Metro General Counsel to come and speak before this committee so that you all can have a conversation with her and basically get her opinion as to why that waiver is required. Or it can be modified.
Yeah, and simply, yes. If the new general manager reports say the safety of the clients comes first, saying that protecting WMATA from the clients doesn't jog with your
concern. Especially if a WMATA sponsor emergency exercise, and I don't see why they would feel that they could entirely ask themselves responsibility for ensuring the safety.
Previously, I've been on two or three exercises and didn't have a waiver. Did something happen that someone got hurt on one of the exercises and sued or something? Because I would go to every one of them and there was no problem.
And I'm not aware of any incident. And again, when they came and spoke to this issue, the answer with the time is that they're just following general best practices for this type of activity in the transit.
So everyone who participates signs a waiver, except the first responders, or just everyone. Who is in the participants? So neighborhood participants, everybody signs a waiver.
My understanding, I can't speak for the first responders, but my understanding is yes, everyone who's a volunteer participant signs that waiver.
So if you came out and participated, you signed a waiver?
I believe that question was answered, and I think employees participating do sign the waiver as well. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that question was asked, and I think that was the answer. Yes.
Well, if they're paid for the time of the waiver, their employees can't get workers' comp.
Well, but again, if you're there, not like, let's say, I'm not, my we all safety conscious, but my job isn't part of the emergency response. So if they have an emergency exercise next week, and I say, well, I just want to participate.
As a volunteer.
Not on the clock, but as a volunteer.
I doubt that the professionals there are volunteering, not on the clock.
No, I agree.
So we are pleased to have our committee chair, AC Wolf, here. And since you were, I think, certainly participate in the last emergency exercise as well. Were you at the meeting as well?
No, I wasn't at that. No, didn't make it to that, but I will, if I can please say a couple things. A couple of mine, and I sent my observations through, but to you guys, hopefully they'll get to the correct people. A couple of things that I noticed is, one, when the train operator came through the train, she didn't identify herself, so there was someone much better on the train giving orders. I had no idea who she was. So that was a little bit disconcerting. So that would be something very simple to fix. I would say that the first responders, firefighters, when they came through the train, they did identify themselves, say who they were. They did a very good job. But one of the issues that I had was that the track bed itself was extremely difficult with a lot of cross tracks, very rough terrain to walk through. The catwalk, of course, is what, 2 feet wide. So it's difficult to walk across, plus you have poles protrude out, makes that area more difficult. If you have a service animal, there's no way you could walk on the catwalk. If you walking on the track bed, they asked me, and I don't know if Larry Hale is here tonight, but they asked me, can you walk? Sure, I can walk, great, no problem. But I had no idea how difficult the terrain was. So I would have expected, or I would think that the first responders and firefighters in a natural emergency would indicate to me that the track bed is extremely dangerous or hard to walk on, and they would overrule my ability or my desire to walk on that track bed. It was very difficult for me to get through them without sounding assistance. I wouldn't have been able to do that. The other thing that I found was lacking was all the instructions that were given orally. So I didn't see anybody who was acting as a deaf person or any deaf people on the train, but I'm wondering how the first responders would have reacted to someone who was deaf. I didn't see I don't know if they have paper and pencil. I certainly don't have any whiteboards. There wasn't any way to have two-way communication. And of course, there was no power on the train. So that would have been a big problem. And I don't know what the difference
is. The exercise I've been involved in other places, they carry pre-printed cards with red lettering and in Braille and multiple languages to use in those exercises.
So that would have been, yeah, and if they did, then that's great, and I would stand corrected. I would think it would be great to have some, to go to the deaf community, Gallaudet, and to make sure that they were actually involved in the exercise. I think that would be great. My other question is, and maybe this was covered before, when you have first responders, firefighters coming in from the jurisdiction, who has precedence? Do the firefighters and first responders have precedence over the scene? Does WMATA have precedence? And I don't know what the protocol is for getting people off the train. They certainly, to myself and Larry said, you guys can get off last. They evacuated everyone else before us. Is that established by WMATA, that protocol? Or when the first responders and firefighters come onto the train, is that something that they establish? Do they have jurisdiction as far as that's concerned? So a couple of my insights, but I don't know how much has been learned over the last 2 years as far as protocol has been concerned in training. It seems like we run across the same issues over and over again. It's great that we train in different jurisdictions, but I wonder how far we're progressing.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Brian.
Yeah, Larry.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing that I may have missed it, Patrick, if you didn't bring it up or if you brought it up. But I know one thing that we were talking about is with regard to the unevenness of the track bed, you know, although a person may be ambulatory, the uneven walkway that the track bed provides
you know, it may be practical, or the person may prefer to be evacuated by one of the electric carts instead of walking the track for safety purposes. So perhaps saying to the person, you know, the track is really uneven or something like that, and you sure you, are you sure you're okay with walking?
Ryan, I may misremember, but the first exercise we did, I remember you had quite an argument because you did yes. want to walk, and they said, no, you're going out on the deck.
That's correct. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I was reluctant to participate in camp, because, and Larry, you mentioned this earlier, which was the importance of listening to individuals with disabilities to let them help responders know how best to help them in a case of emergency. And that was my frustration, was that, and again, as I said before, they had said, well, we need practice working with these carts. Would you be willing to get on the cart so we can, you know, have some experience with that? Yeah, sure. But I wanted experience evacuating on the tracks, and I wanted to know how hard it was, in an otherwise safe environment. Right? And I was denied that opportunity. I think, oh, it's uneven, there's a hose here or there, and, you know. So that was my frustration.
As someone who walks to the Judiciary Square Station with Patrick quite often, there's no way that he could walk on the tracks or on the platform, because when we walk, he drifts.
So this
is yours to the left, and yours to the right. And he may think he can do that, but on a narrow track bed. And unless someone were holding him and making sure.
I don't know about that, though, Phil. I guess it's an individual thing. But
in an emergency, and you're trying to get as many people off as fast as they can possibly get them off, they have to put somebody with someone that's going to have difficulty walking a straight line in a very narrow, rough track bed. It says, no, I'm sorry, you're going to put other people's lives in danger if we let you test the system and see if you can make it.
I think
that's why they do what they do.
So I think in situations where
I want to confess that assumption that it's inherently a hazard to other people for black people for long time.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons, sorry, there, I'm finished, please. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have that experience, because it is individualized. I think everybody would have the right to say, I'm not comfortable with that, I want the car, because who knows what's out there. And that's totally cool. I mean, I have no argument with that whatsoever.
Larry, let me jump in. My question is, and I understand, Ryan, where you're coming from, Larry, understand where you're coming from. I'll tell you, Larry, I went home, took a 2-hour nap, and you were going out for a hamburger with five and I'm at rest with that. But I will say that my question is, and I think this is a good question to ask and get an answer to, we may not like the answer, is who calls the shot when you are in the station? Now, Brian, you may say, hey, I want to try the track bed. And the first responder may have jurisdiction over that and say, you know what, buddy, you're taking the e-card. And so I'm not sure if we have an answer to that. I don't know who runs the show. Is it WMATA? Is it the first responders, you know, in the jurisdiction? And then if it is, how is their evacuation protocol in Prince George's County compare with Montgomery County, Fairfax, D.C.? That's what I really would like to know.
The groups, they told us that fire takes control, fire EMS takes control. When we had them all here at our meeting, and the point they made was it was pretty constant, from Fairfax to Arlington to whatever, because there was the event in Arlington and Russell, and it was the same procedure that the fire chief or fire chief's representative was the one in charge.
My question, I'm listening to y'all, are we still, the handicapped people are going last still? They're going last? Well, I've got a problem with that.
Yeah, frankly, that was one of my concerns at least, because I sat around waiting for that stupid event card to come down the road.
Yeah.
I would have been home by the time, you know. So, Phil talks about, others have done well, safety of others. I'm thinking also about saving myself.
Yeah, but
that
would have been dead.
That event card to go.
Yeah.
If I can get out on my own.
But the smoke, I would have been dead. So, okay.
Yeah.
Why is it that we we have discussed this before. Why is it that we are last?
Yeah, I'll quote Doris Merritt, who said she would never go on another exercise because she was left in the middle of the bridge over the Potomac for 2 hours in a snowstorm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So there's a lot to discuss here, and obviously this is still a topic that has very energized for obvious reasons. And I think Patrick's question is one that is a good one about jurisdiction and protocols. And again, speaking to my own experience, when the first responders are coming up to you and saying, we need to do this, I'm disinclined to argue with them.
Make your computer easier to use. Windows will read and cancel.
Everybody evacuate.
Yeah, that's right. I was getting a little worried about where this one's going. some things we need to clear up. And in fact, before you arrived, we actually did agree that we'd like to have the folks come back out and have another discussion, since we've had a couple of evacuation experiences and emergency exercises since our last meeting here in I think that was the VRs where we had that, right? We think it's time for that again. I mean, there was a couple of other substantive suggestions about demonstration videos and training materials it's been a really good conversation. I don't know if anyone has anything to add that we haven't covered already.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Chair Charlie Gordon.
Thank you. Listening to the whole conversation and remembering back to what Heidi had to say in the beginning as to what the issue was in her mind, that the Metro was losing a real opportunity for substantive input from persons with especially wheelchair users, simply because they prohibit or they require a waiver. And given the fact that I'm gathering there is no statutory requirement to have a waiver, then it seems to me that Phil's suggestion to have some kind of negotiated work with Metro to come up with, if at all possible, some level of limited participation by folks with disabilities without the problem of the waiver, that would be a good solution. Otherwise, I think we'll be here all night.
Exactly. Thank you for reminding me that. Patrick, we also did talk about the waiver, so like this, it doesn't surprise you. And we have Phil made the good suggestion that we bring the new general counsel out to make their case and for us to make our case and see how that goes, since there is this new general counsel. So maybe a good opportunity to readdress that issue and concern, because it does seem to be having an impact on participation levels and participation rates, certainly with this committee, and I think that's understandable. Thank you very much, Charlie. I appreciate that. Anyone else? We'll move on to, thank you, Larry, for the comments when you were our program star today. And you did a great job. Thank you. All right, Dr. B.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just do a quick follow-up on the election for the bus rail subcommittee. I know we've been working trying to get something for a while, but finally we've gotten it. So members had an opportunity to vote all last week, and the nominees for first vice chair was Breanne Berger and Charlie Crawford, and then for second vice chair was Ed McEntee. And the AAC voted to have Breanne Berger for first vice chair and Ed McEntee for second vice chair of the BRS. The ballot is in.
Well, congratulations.
We did have a hanging chant, though, with Charlie. I suggest that we have Charlie as a standby interim while Breanne is recovering from her current childbirth.
Yes, I spoke to her. She said she might try to make it to this meeting. She wasn't really sure, but she should definitely be back by our December or January meeting. But absolutely, we're always happy for any member to step up and help if necessary. But I think we have a new capable second vice chair that is going to be ready. So we're looking forward to it. So congratulations to everybody.
And thank you for everyone who's wanted to serve us in those roles. I really appreciate it. And certainly this past year, I relied pretty heavily on my vice chairs to step in when I wasn't available for various reasons to be here. So I really appreciate that. Thanks to all of you for stepping up. And congratulations to the two who were voted in for those positions. So, Dr. Gia, are there any other news? Oh, did you want to say anything about Wednesday's award ceremony? Left me here, was he late for anyone? Isn't that this Wednesday?
Yes,
Wednesday, 5:30, the annual, I think it's the fifth annual accessibility awards. We're going to honor the Hettinger Award winner is voted by the members of the AAC, and that's the former ADA Ombudsman Antonia Stevens. The Simon Award is going to Congresswoman and now Senator-elect Tammy Duckworth.
Is she going to be here?
I don't have a confirmation on the union, I think.
Can she get a Metro Access run?
from Illinois, right?
Well, yes, she's from Illinois. Well,
right outside the service.
Still, as a member of the appeal panel, you know, we're going to have to make sure she...
I think we should do it.
Well, she's coming from the House. That's close to the Capitol South, so she can get a ride.
Unless she's in Illinois.
But she should get a con for coming from a different...
Well, unless she applied and we declined it.
What?
An appeal. Let's bring But activity starts at 5:30 for networking, as we call it, and then the ceremony begins at 6.
And it runs about an hour, right?
Yeah. Hour and a half. Well, the program is about an hour. Yeah, 5:30 to 7.
Yeah, okay. Because I have a Metro Access. Okay. Cool. Excellent. Thank you for reminding reminding Patrick here to remind everyone about that. So that there were that. It's good to have a good showing from the AAC. Okay. Any other concerns?
Move for adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. No, that was on the microphone, Dr.
Okay.
We have a second from Marissa. Thank you, Marissa. And before we take up that vote, I do want to also thank wish a happy birthday to Dr. Phil Bozer again. Thanks for being here. Okay, so we have a motion to adjourn. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention?